Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The State Board of Equalization met earlier this week in Oklahoma City to certify revenue for this fiscal year and also provide an estimate of the general revenue available for next year, which will guide the legislature in making its appropriations. Unfortunately, the news was not good on either front, with estimates for this year being off by more than 5%, which triggered a revenue failure, and a mid-year cut to state agencies that are funded through general revenue. And the projection of revenue for fiscal year 18 was down by over $700 million over this year, and that's after the cuts that are coming right now. This in a year when the legislature is trying to raise teacher salaries and offer other needed appropriation increases for state agencies. As a result, it looks to be a very difficult spring in Oklahoma City as legislators seem to be balking at raising revenues, and yet there's a $714 million gap between last year's expenditures and the expected revenue to come in fiscal year 18. To talk about what's happening in Oklahoma City, looking at a sense of where the legislature is likely to go, my guest today is the policy director for the Oklahoma Policy Institute, Gene Perry. He joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Gene Perry, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Earlier this week, the State Board of Equalization met to approve a revised revenue estimates for the remainder of this fiscal year, in which they said estimates are not up to the level they expected, so they did declare a revenue failure, and also to certify the revenues projections for the next fiscal year. And like I said, we had a revenue failure this year, and next year's general revenue are projected to be around just over $6 billion, $6.03 billion. Mm-hmm. That's the lowest, and you have to go back 12 years or more to see revenue that long. What does this mean for state government?
It's not good for state government. We're going to see immediate budget cuts because of this most recent revenue failure, and we're likely going to see more budget cuts going into the next budget year. Unless there is a major, major effort by the legislature to come up with some real new recurring revenues. And so far, honestly, we haven't seen that kind of major effort happening.
Now, in this year, the revenue failure is equal to a 0.7% cut. Mm-hmm. But now when you actually hear about education, we're hearing about a 2.1% cut. Now, how does that come out of that? This is because the money comes from different sources and there's a revenue failure in some of the other sources as
well.
Yeah,
so it's even worse for education. We've got about a $34 million cut to all the state agencies that are getting general revenue, including education. But then we also have that shortfall in the 1017 fund, which is dedicated to education. So altogether, that means about $50 million being cut right now from our schools. And that's really difficult for schools to deal with in the middle of the year. They've already made their contracts with all of their teachers. There's very, very little that they can cut without getting into a lot of things that I think is going to make a lot of parents and kids unhappy.
Now, the total amount of cuts to education amount to about 2.1% when you include these other sources. Mm-hmm. But that's really not 2.1% because we're two-thirds of the way through the school year. So you're going to have to do that cut over the last third, in which they probably spent at least two-thirds of their budget, probably more at that point.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in the shoes of a school finance officer right now because they're going to have to make some really hard, maybe impossible decisions. I'm not sure how some of them are going to do it.
What are you hearing from school officials as far as what they can do to balance a budget by the end of the year?
I haven't heard the specifics so far. I think they're still really trying to figure it out, so we're going to see.
Now, what about the rest of state agencies? How does this 0.7% cut? Now, that's only if you're completely funded by general revenues, correct? Mm-hmm. How does this work in Oklahoma? Because, you know, some state agencies will not be taking cuts at all. Some will be taking less than 0.7. In fact, education from general revenues is less than 0.7%.
Yeah.
How does this work in Oklahoma?
So it really depends on how much of their money is coming from the general revenue fund that the legislature divvies up and gives out to agencies every year. But there are plenty of agencies that get their money through fees, for example. The district attorney's office is one, the insurance commissioner, the state treasurer. A lot of these agencies have only a portion or some none at all from that general revenue. And they get it from these other areas where, for the most part, they're not going to be seeing budget cuts. Now, as you mentioned, with education, some of them are actually going to be seeing more budget cuts because of the shortfalls in multiple areas that are coming in.
Are there shortfalls in more than just the general revenue fund at this particular point? Now, I know the one that applies to education is the state 1017 fund.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 1017 is what's affecting education. The others are, it's a little hard to say right now because they're not kind of on the same schedule of when we look at them and say this is meeting our revenue for now or not. But we'll see going into the next budget year, we're probably going to hear about revolving funds. So this is a lot of where some of that revenue is coming from for agencies. And if they have extra money, that might be where the legislature is going to go to grab money to fund everything else. But in the meantime, they're funding those agencies who aren't getting appropriations.
Now, this is something we've been using for the last few years to balance a budget through the general revenue fund is the use of revolving funds. Are those depleting at this point, or is this sort of another sort of off the general revenue books sort of way of raising money for state government?
Yeah, so there's a mix. There's a lot of revolving funds out there, and some of them, frankly, do seem to be bringing in more via fees or whatever other source of revenue they have than is necessary for the agency that's using it. So in those cases, the legislature can come back year after year and take it out, and at some point we may stop calling that one-time money because we're using it every year. But it does reflect a shift away from general taxes to the use of user fees to run state government. And there are some questions about whether that's really appropriate to do. But there are other revolving funds that have been depleted. And one that we've talked about is the uncompensated care fund that's needed funding from the state appropriations just to fill up, and we've never actually funded what is necessary to do the job that we're asking of that, which is to fund community health centers, some of the basic safety net healthcare providers for people who don't have any other kinds of access to healthcare, and we haven't been funding that one adequately. So that's one where it's really creating some bad outcomes.
In fact, actually, the state actually encouraged the expansion of those community health centers just a few years ago, did they not?
Yeah, it's widely acknowledged that these provide really effective, efficient care and reach the people who need it most, people in high poverty areas, people with high needs, high uninsured rates, but we're still not funding them to the level that they need to meet all the demand that's out there for that care.
Yeah. This gets to another point about the state budget. You know, it's far from transparent. I know your organization, the Oklahoma Policy Institute, has advocated more transparency. Why can't these revolving funds be a part of the general revenue, or at least seen as a part of the general revenue, to know how much money is actually coming into the state government?
Yeah, and that's one of the reforms that Governor Fallon recommended in her State of the State speech this year in her executive budget, to take some of these revolving funds and say, okay, let's admit that we're using them every year and just make them part of the normal process. So that's one thing to talk about. And it's a complicated budget because it's doing a lot of things. You know, running the state of Oklahoma isn't easy or simple. We have a lot of services that are being provided. But there's definitely things we can do to make it more transparent. One that we've especially called for at OK Policy is to say that don't introduce the budget in the last week of session and rush it through before anybody's had a chance to look at it, which is what happened last year and what happens, frankly,
nearly every year
when we have a budget shortfall and when there's budget cuts coming. If we ever have a surplus again, we might see more discussion, but in the meantime, we're really not giving the public a chance to see what's happening.
Well, for the other departments and agencies within state government, how is this 0.7 cut likely to affect them? Say something like corrections or public safety or some of these ones that are basically funded out of general revenue.
Yeah, so corrections is going to be especially difficult because they are so far underwater. And recently, we're pointing out that Oklahoma needs to spend $1.8 billion over the next 10 years just to build the new prisons that our current trajectory has us on. And they are deeply understaffed and overcrowded in a lot of these prisons, so it's difficult to see how they're going to cope with it. That might be one where the legislature needs to come back and give them some relief. Another agency that probably is going to need some mid-year relief is the Department of Human Services, because they've been deeply cut. They've had more money going to child welfare because of a court order that requires us to do that. But that's meant that everything else that they do, which are things like protecting vulnerable adults, providing utility bill assistance, still working with some of the most vulnerable people in our state, that's been cut up to 40%. And really, they don't have a lot more they can do, so they're going to need some extra money.
Well, as bad as this year seems to be, it's going to be even worse next year unless something really changes at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Estimates are down $700 million plus, $700 million from last year. Mm-hmm. And that's on top of what was expected to be lots of additional expenditures in this year. You mentioned corrections. The corrections director actually filed for what he actually said it would really need to take to run corrections right. And it was like, what, 200% increase or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've been lucky this far not to get a federal lawsuit challenging the way that we're operating our correction system, because there's absolutely some human rights concerns, some safety concerns, both for inmates and corrections officers. And they're not rehabilitating people. People are going into those prisons in environments where they don't have education resources, they don't have mental health or substance abuse treatment, and they are in a dangerous situation, and so they come out totally unprepared to, in some cases, rehabilitate and rebuild their lives and get a job, and that's the opposite. They're not correcting in there.
Yeah. Now, the governor called for about $300 million, a little over $300 million in new expenditures. How does this work when you're actually looking at $713 million less than last year, at least according to the projections, mm-hmm. with, you know, everyone in the legislature saying teachers need a raise? How are you going to add expenditures when you still have $700 million less?
Yeah, so credit to the governor for actually coming up with an ambitious plan that would have the real revenues behind some of the things that she says that we need and that, frankly, most of the legislature and most Oklahomans believe we need, like a teacher raise. Now, she proposed some things that have not gone very far in the legislature, and the biggest part of that was saying we should extend the sales tax to cover all services on the books. And that immediately you saw all of these news stories coming out with, you know, the funeral directors saying, oh, we're going to be another death tax, and people saying this is going to be increase in utility bills and some of these services that are really sensitive when you start to look at what is on the list. And that similarly has not seemed to get much support in the legislature. So that's one area where good on her for at least kind of saying this is the scale of what we need to do because of the situation we're in. And I would say there's arguments against what she's proposed, absolutely. But the people who say, no, we can't do that, also need to be saying, here's what we can do instead.
How much money would that have raised as the way she proposed it? What was she estimating it was going to raise?
So that was about between $800 and $900 million for the state budget. And then it would be another almost $1 billion for local governments, because then the local governments would be able to charge sales tax on those same purchases.
Now, that's even with her proposal to eliminate the tax on groceries, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that
would have been a net. So, I mean, that's a net $900 million.
Yeah, so she suggested eliminating the sales tax on groceries and eliminating the corporate income tax. And there were several other items in there that she had, but all of them put together would have been on net an increase in revenue.
But so far, when you look at solutions, the sales tax on services, it seems to be gaining opponents in the legislature every day. Is this going to go anywhere? Even maybe a limited sales tax on services?
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of outcry, and we're hearing a lot more from the opponents of that. It doesn't, at least right now, there's not a bill moving through that would do anything about a sales tax on services. It is something that maybe will show up in a final budget deal that the legislature comes up with. And there are some services on that list that the governor put out that we probably should be taxing, things that are taxed in a lot of our other states and things that are pretty similar to the kind of purchases that the sales tax already covers.
For example?
Cable television, for example. You might put auto repairs or durable goods repairs.
That would
that
be
list.
Like for the labor on auto repairs.
Uh-huh, yeah, right. For the labor, maybe some legal services, accounting services. Horse boarding services is one. If you're talking about, you know, the sales tax on things that aren't going to hurt low-income families, that's probably one that's unlikely. We actually have a sales tax exemption for purchases of professional sports tickets, and that's not very defensible. So those are the kinds of things we should look at.
My guest today is Gene Perry, a policy director for the Oklahoma Policy Institute. As we look at the upcoming budget and what looks to be another difficult legislative year to balance a budget at this particular point. So the sales tax on services doesn't look like it's going anywhere. You know, it looked like we were going to have a cigarette tax increase last year, mm-hmm. but it fell through. What is your sense on a cigarette tax increase?
Yeah. So the cigarette tax increase is the one that the legislative leadership is really pushing hard for. Now, the trick is they have to get 75% approval in both the House and the Senate to make it happen because of State Question 640. And to do that, in the House, you're going to need 76 votes. There are 74 Republicans, so you at least need a few Democrats. And there are some number of Republicans that aren't going to vote for any tax increase no matter what. So they're going to need at least a good portion of the Democrats to support the cigarette tax increase. And so that's really what it's come down to. That's what it came down to last year. And there was a lot of debate, and the Democrats were saying, well, if you want us to sign on to this, you have to offer some other change that kind of helps with the regressivity of the cigarette tax. And this year, we might see it come down to that as well. So things like restoring the cuts to the earned income tax credit that the legislature made last year, or helping boost the sales tax relief credit, doing something to help those families that may be harmed the most by a cigarette tax increase.
Now, a lot of talk about a fuel tax increase, too. We haven't raised it in decades.
Yeah.
Is there any talk of that coming out this year?
Yeah, so we are seeing talk about that as well. And we haven't raised the fuel tax since 1987. And unlike the sales tax, which is a percentage of the purchase, the fuel tax is a number of pennies per gallon. So over time, inflation makes it worth less and less every year. And Oklahoma actually has gone the longest, except for Alaska, as far as updating our fuel tax. So that's one that definitely seems like is overdue to be increased. And one option that's been thrown out there is to increase it automatically when gas prices are very low and decrease it when gas prices are high. So that would both help consumers when they need it most, when gas prices are high, and provide a counterbalance to the fluctuations we get in the gross production tax on oil and gas drilling.
Yeah, and when it lowers, you would expect the state to be making more money from gross production taxes.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And you mentioned the gross production tax. This is one where, you know, even though the price of oil is stabilized, you're not seeing the revenue you got out of it when it was at a similar price a number of years ago. Is that because we've lowered the gross production tax overall into the deal to get rid of the incentives for horizontal drilling? Are we just not mm-hmm. going to see as much money from gross production tax down the road unless it's changed?
Yeah, so the gross production tax is at 2% for the first 3 years for all new wells now, compared to the 7% that it was at for the past three decades mostly. And so it does seem unlikely that we're going to get the same kind of boom in revenues when the oil and gas industry comes back. And in fact, it's estimated that next year, the cost of all those subsidies for oil and gas compared to what we'd be bringing in if it was at 7% is more than $500 million. So even at this time when the industry is relatively low, it's still a massive subsidy.
Yeah. And is there much action in the legislature to change anything on that?
No, not that we've seen.
My guest today is Gene Perry. He's the policy director for the Oklahoma Policy Institute. Now, as we talk about the state budget for the coming year, now, one of the things, everything we've talked about turns the state into a more regressive taxation structure. If you add sales tax on services, that's going to hurt disproportionately the poor as opposed to more affluent people. If you increase the cigarette tax, if you increase the fuel tax, all, you know, anything that has to do on sales of basic services will hurt lesser income Oklahomans more than upper incomes. Mm-hmm. Is there any sign that we're having a way to fix this budget hole that is more progressive?
I mean, there are ways whether the legislature is going to do things like bring back an income tax rate that's higher for some of those very high incomes, that doesn't seem very likely. Now, we've at least got to the point where they're admitting that we shouldn't be cutting the income tax more, and a bill just passed out of committee with very strong majorities to stop the next income tax cut. It could have been triggered this year if revenues were good enough, and it still could be triggered next year if we don't change the legislation. So that does seem like we've reached the point where we're at least saying, okay, we've gone at least far enough in these tax cuts.
Now, does that bill change the overall thrust of the earlier bill, which basically says when you have revenue increases, you see decreases in the top income tax rate, or is it just for the next year?
So there are a couple different versions out there. One would increase the amount of revenue that we would have before that tax cut is triggered. Another would just do away with the trigger altogether. So we'll say
be no more.
No more trigger. And if future legislatures want to cut the income tax, they can do it. But we're not going to have it on this autopilot.
Hmm. What's the status of those bills? Do you expect those to get out this year?
Yeah, so one actually just passed the Appropriations Committee by 38-2, I believe, was the vote. So it does seem like there's a lot of support behind that.
But that doesn't really help revenue this year, does it?
It doesn't help revenue this year. And this year, we're still in a bad situation. And there hasn't been much movement on those kind of progressive tax increases from basically where the money is to fund the budget. So it looks like we're in for another difficult budget year.
So as you're looking at the legislature right now, I mean, I know things really don't get serious usually till March when they actually really start looking, okay, we got to get a balanced budget. But are you seeing anything that could lead to more revenue rather than cutting our way to a balanced budget?
You know, the cigarette tax is definitely on the table. The gas tax is probably on the table. They're going to figure out every other trick they have in the books to find other one-time revenues. But every year they do that, they have less tricks left for future years. So it's going to be a difficult budget once again.
Now, the director of finance, Preston Dorflinger, said, "We are out of tricks." Is that not necessarily the case?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's very likely to be more budget cuts. Governor Fallon seems to have set down the gauntlet more strongly than she has in the past, though, and actually said that she would veto a budget that didn't bring in enough revenues. So we might see more pressure on the legislature to do something real this year.
Now, you mentioned a cigarette tax and a gas tax. How much money would that bring in, the way it's being talked about at this particular point? I know the final number impacts how much money you actually raise.
Yeah, I hadn't looked at the specific number. So, yeah, I don't want to quote you a wrong number there. But it would be a moderate increase in revenues because they're both are relatively minor taxes. They're not things like the income tax and the sales tax and on the local level, the property tax, which are really the three kind of foundational taxes that fund state governments.
I know you don't want to give an exact number, but can you give us a range? Are we talking like the 100 million range, the 50 to 25 to 50 range, or what exactly?
Yeah, around the 100 million range is, is what we'd be looking at.
Yeah. Now, earlier we alluded to State Question 640, which is what requires any raise in revenue to either go to a vote to the people or have supermajorities of 75% in both houses. Is there any effort to change this? Because it seems like it doesn't give the legislature flexibility in a way to raise enough revenues to basically accomplish the basic functions of state government, of you know, handing things like public safety, health, education, and the like.
It really doesn't. We've definitely started talking about at Oklahoma Policy Institute the need to reassess that state question and the need to take that supermajority requirement off the books, which is really harder in Oklahoma to raise taxes than in any other state in the nation. There are some other places with supermajority requirements, but the three-fourths supermajority is really an outlier. And we're seeing the downfall of that. You know, we had years when we had this boom and the legislature could come in and cut taxes with a simple majority. And now, when we're in the bust years, there's a clear, widely acknowledged need for new revenues, but you can't get the 75% to do anything about it. So it's hamstrung our legislature. It's hamstrung the people of Oklahoma from getting the things that they're really asking for state government to do. So for the sake of all those reasons, we would hope that there's an effort to reassess it.
No. As we mentioned earlier, estimates are down by over $700 million over the previous year. What would $700 million of cuts do to an effective state government?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, there's a whole litany of cuts that we've already made that have done things like ended investigations of abuse of invulnerable adults.
So we're talking about nursing home inspections and things like that?
Nursing home inspections, but also in investigations when there's a complaint that, you know, someone's living with the family and being abused, that have shut down mental health beds, even though Oklahoma has the second highest mental illness in the nation and almost the lowest funding of mental health treatment. We have heard a lot about the problems that schools have faced. And that's happening even though education has been relatively protected. It's the single biggest area of government, but it's been cut 3%, 4% year after year at times when other parts of the government have been cut 20%, 40%. And there's, you know, we've cut so many things to the bone, we can't save education without new revenues. And that means things like four-day school weeks. That means things like lots of class sizes increasing and programs being eliminated. So, you know, everywhere you look, you're going to find real services that are important to Oklahomans that are being lost.
Now, we talked a little bit about the revolving funds earlier. That could raise some more revenue. Mm-hmm. What about the rainy day fund? We've been using that for several years now in a row. Is there anything left in the rainy day fund?
Yeah, there is a few hundred million left in the rainy day fund, and that absolutely can be tapped and probably should be tapped. That there's, you know, a question that should we use all of it this year or should we save it, because we don't seem to have a light at the end of the tunnel yet about on this budget situation. So that's going to be a hard choice.
All right. Well, you can learn more about the choices facing legislatures at the Oklahoma Policy Institute website, okpolicy.org. Gene Perry is the policy director there. And Gene, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Gene Perry is the policy director for the Oklahoma Policy Institute. You can learn more about their work at okpolicy.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.